The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
In a world where jobs are how most people make money, one man, one desire, one challenge dares to break the mold. Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where we don't work for money. Money works for us. Coming soon, viewer discretion advised.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network, where cash flow is king. Real estate investing, the means, so you can enjoy your retirement dreams. This is the show where we cut right to the chase. No sales pitch, no long monologues, just simple how-to real estate investing advice, so you can earn the passive income you need to enjoy your retirement today. And now, your host and chief old dog, Bill Manassero.
Welcome to the Old Dogs REI Network. I'm your host, Bill Manassero, and this is the show where 50-plussers and anyone else who wants to join us get solid, no-sales-pitch real estate investing advice to help generate real cash flow. This podcast airs twice weekly on Mondays and Fridays, and if you aren't already a subscriber, go to iTunes or Apple Podcasts, type in Old Dogs, spelled D-A-W-G-S, find our podcast and subscribe. Well, we have a great show for you today. I am so stoked about it. You know, I talk a lot on this show about the importance of education to your success as a real estate investor. And I've also said the real education, though, begins not with the training courses, home study courses, boot camps, books, podcasts, webinars, etc. I mean, they all help. But the real education begins when you sign your first set of escrow papers for your first investment property. Well, we're doing something a little different today because I am going to be bringing somebody who's on the show that's very early in their process. But they certainly have not lacked in terms of experience and things that they have encountered along the way. In fact, I actually met this young man when we lived in Haiti. That's right. He came over there to serve in our mission, and it was awesome. Great, great young man. Years later, we stayed in contact, and I found out this guy got into real estate. So he's a person who has done all the research, but he did that big step, which a lot of people are still having tough difficulty with, and that is the first step to actually acquire that first property. So he's going to share a lot of this being fresh in his mind, what it's like to finally make that first step, and how you set yourself up from that point forward. And so I am talking about it, and as a big long introduction here, let me give you some information about him. His name is Ian Gilligan, that's right, and he is a 33-year-old investor living in Waco, Texas. Now, he didn't always live in Waco, but when I first met him, he actually was working in the entertainment industry. He has a background there and lived in the Hollywood area. His interest in real estate investing peaked after listening to an episode of this podcast. I am humbled here, back in 2018. And a year later, he purchased his first single-family home in Dayton, Ohio. So here he is in Hollywood area. He buys in Dayton, and now he's living in Waco. What's going on? Well, we'll find out here in just a moment. Recently, he stepped down from his full-time job in entertainment marketing, and he purchased three more homes in Dayton in the last 3 weeks. Now he's finishing up a flip in Waco and is taking steps toward actively wholesaling in McLennan County, Texas. Well, I am going to welcome Ian to the Old Dogs REI Network. How you doing, Ian?
Oh, I'm great, Bill. Thank you so much for having me. It's excellent being here.
Oh, it's great having you here. And man, you have just been on this thing, and it's real exciting to see. I mean, there's a lot of stuff to unpack here, because obviously we want to know how you went from Hollywood to Waco and on your journey, obviously, in real estate investing. So, yeah, you know, just tell us a little bit more about yourself and where you came from and how you eventually got into this crazy real estate world.
Sure. So born and raised in San Diego, California, grew up doing theater and the like. That's how I initially got into entertainment performing. Moved up to Los Angeles when I was 19, just a year out of high school. Started auditioning up there and doing all that. Acted for a handful of years and then got out after I discovered it really wasn't my passion. I really love the craft of acting. So I figured if I didn't love the craft, I should probably not be in that industry trying to, you know, perform and execute that craft. Got into advertising and have been in advertising ever since then. As you mentioned, my initial spark into what piqued my interest in real estate investing was listening to your show. And I don't even know, Bill, if we've really discussed this, you and I, ever, but I first listened to the show, not even because I was particularly interested in real estate investing, but because I knew you produced and hosted this show. And I'm like, well, I mean, if a friend of mine is putting all this effort into this show, I might as well at least support him by listening to an episode. So I remember scrolling down the list of your shows, and I saw the episode where you had Robert Kiyosaki on. And I had not even read Rich Dad at the time, but I knew him by name. So I was like, oh, wow, he's got Robert Kiyosaki on. Must be legit. So I ended up listening to that episode. And after listening to that one and listening to a handful more of your shows, and it didn't take me long really to be sold on real estate as an investment, just how smart a move it was financially. So that was in 2018, as you mentioned, and then just kind of stayed in the education phase for, I don't know, 6 months-ish or so. Chose Dayton as a market with you. I don't know if you remember that, but we had a discussion about that and kind of landed on Dayton and then ended up buying my first. It would have been fall 2019.
That's so awesome. You are not a kind of an impulsive person, I could say, from knowing you. I mean, you're very cautious. I know you are a saver. You're very smart with your money. You're not the kind of guy to say, I'll try this, you know. You really thought it out. I mean, as you would even, you know, contact me and say, hey, you know, this is what I'm thinking, but you run ideas by and so forth. So I you're not somebody to jump into something, especially, you know, when it involves an investment. And you had to be pretty sure that this was where, you know, what you wanted to do.
Yeah, very much so. And I mean, I was not educated when it comes to investments at all, really, before I listened to your show. I mean, I remember having a conversation with a friend of mine who's pretty savvy entrepreneur. It would have been maybe a year or so before I got introduced to you and your show. And he was talking to me about leverage. He was like, oh, yeah, I mean, you can use leverage in business. And I was like, oh, yeah, totally leverage. Like, I legit didn't know what he meant. I didn't know what he meant. So I had kind of the personal finance game dialed in. I mean, I was budgeting and just, you know, aware of where all my money was going and not going. But as far as investing, and I was just absolutely, I was clueless before I listened to your show. And so, yeah, it was a very measured, cautious kind of initial foray into real estate.
Yeah. And I remember Dayton. In fact, Dayton was a place that I really was impressed with early on when I started investing. And I said, you know, because I was learning about emerging markets, and it seemed like it was when, definitely sort of the bottom of the bell curve, you know.
Yeah.
That can't go much lower here, you know.
Exactly.
But yeah, that's what attracted me to it, because I was looking at apartments and you could get some great deals there in apartments at that time. And I was just going, this is, and then I looked at what was happening around Dayton. And I remember you totally went for it, did your own research. You didn't just, take my word for it, but you went in there and dug. And it seemed like it has been working well for you, because now you've got a number of properties there already. Mm-hmm. And, maybe you can tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Well, yeah, I mean, just some comments real quick on Dayton as a market. I mean, you mentioned that at the time it was kind of at the bottom of the bell curve. And in a way, it still is a little bit. I mean, values have certainly gone up quite a bit over the last couple of years, but that's one of the reasons why I'm still interested in and obviously investing there, because I feel like it's just a good place to get in while values are still lowish. So anyway, yeah, I mean, the last handful of weeks just really started to kind of ramp up there. And one of the reasons why I feel like I could start to ramp up and move as quickly as I have is because of the couple of properties that I've bought over the last couple of years. So I was already familiar enough with the market. I already had a team in place between my property management company, my agent, and my contractor, who's done just a great job for me on the two properties that I purchased over the last couple of years, and then is handling all three of the current rehabs, actually. So, yeah, all the pieces were just kind of in place to begin to move at a bit of a quicker clip.
Now, what was interesting is, you know, you were, okay, here you are, I think, in the Hollywood area, Burbank and so forth, and very talented. You didn't really talk about that, but very talented editor, right? And producer, doing a lot of film, you know, sort of the behind the scenes, you know, pre and post production type stuff. Mm-hmm. And when COVID hit, right, that was sort of an opportunity for you, like, because you were working remote already.
Exactly.
to make a move, right?
Yeah. So I just remember sitting at my house in the middle of summer 2020. So we're a few months into the pandemic, and I'd already bought my first two in Dayton at the time. And I was like, man, so long as I'm working remotely, I should buy something out of state, get some roommates to pay down my mortgage for me. I'd always wanted a house hack, but never could in Los Angeles, just because it's, so incredibly expensive. And I was like, well, I guess now is as good a time to do it as any, and ran it past the company, and they were okay with it. So long as I, was going to come back at the end of my stay. That ended up changing. We'll get to that later, but, and yeah, why Waco? I have some really good friends out here. There was a church in town, actually, that I was pretty keen on being a part of. So when I had the whole crazy idea to buy something out of state and a house hack, Waco was the first place that I thought of because of my connections here. So, and it ended up just being a terrific move, and I'm so grateful to be here. I love Waco. It was quite the welcome change after 12 years of city life in LA. So, very grateful to be here in Waco, so that's how I wound up in Central Texas after 30 years in Southern California.
Wow. And you, Waco, I don't know how it is doing as a market. I've kind of heard good things about it. And have you witnessed that yourself in terms, are you still looking in that area as far as investments are concerned too?
Yeah, a little bit. Waco has just spiked in their prices over the last handful of years. If you look at a graph of the last 10 years, like when 2018 hits, there's just this tremendous spike in prices. It went way, way up. And I think there's a handful of reasons for that. One is certainly Chip and Joanna Gaines, and just kind of the visibility that they brought to Waco. Baylor is also responsible for Waco starting to turn around and do a lot better as a market. They've pumped a lot of money into the city over the last handful of years. So it's certainly got a lot of things going for it. I mean, it's right in between Austin and Dallas, which are just, I think both in the top 10 of the fastest growing cities in the nation, if I remember correctly. And And so it's just, and there's a handful of other reasons as to why it's doing really well for itself. But yeah, as a market, it's pretty strong. And yeah, I mean, we'll see. I'd like to buy a little bit more here. As you mentioned, I've got the flip going here that we're almost done with. And yeah, I'm planning to buy more here in Waco. McLennan County can be a little tough as far as inspections and all of that permitting. Like it's just little rough on that side of things. So I'm a touch hesitant on like how much do I want to buy here, but I will continue to buy here in Waco. Just unsure exactly how much and for how long.
Sure, and so you start off as kind of a, you know, a rental guy, right? So okay, that now you're getting into these other areas, which is really interesting. And you know, tell me about your sort of moving into a flip. You know, as you're doing your first, now you still have our house hacking, right? So your home is technically an investment, right? So normally when we just buy a home, it's, you know, according to Robert Kiyosaki, it's not an investment until you rent it out, and which is what you're doing, which is cool. So, but you, what made you want to get in flipping?
Well, the flip, I should have been more cautious with my words there. I mean, we are going to hold it as a long-term rental. I was just using that terminology because it was just a total gut. It needed we joke, my partner and I, my friend who I partnered with on this house, we joke that we essentially built an entire new house from the ground up, because that's more or less once we've done, I mean, just literally every single system of the house we had to touch. So, so we're not going to sell it. We are going to hold it. The rental market here in Waco is very, very strong. So we're not concerned about, being able to get someone in there and get a solid renter, but, yeah, not flipping, to sell, but definitely flipping to hold long-term.
Gotcha. You, mentioned too that you're just sort of looking at wholesaling. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I initially kind of started down this path because I was, I remember it probably would have been the end of last year. I was trying to buy something at auction here in Waco. And one of the handful of properties that I was going after, it didn't show up at auction, which sometimes can happen for a myriad of reasons, but didn't show up at auction. And then a handful of days later, a friend of mine texted me a screenshot of a property that he had just seen pop up on our local Facebook page for investors here in town. And it was the exact same property that I had wanted the most from the auction a handful of days ago. Long story short, some wholesaler had got it. It didn't work out for me to buy it off of them, but my guess is just knowing how much was owed on the property, how much they probably got it under contract for, and around how much they ended up selling it for, these wholesalers probably made like $30,000 on an assignment fee for this house. And I mean, that kind of did a couple of things for me. One, it made me want to find my own off-market leads. Not even that I can't necessarily stomach a wholesaler making a big fee. I mean, if they can make their big fee and I can make my money, then great. But it made me want to find my own off-market leads, one. And then two, I was like, man, if these guys can do it and if they can hustle and make these assignment fees, I can do the same thing too, and I can keep the best for myself to hold as rentals, and then I can wholesale the rest of them. So that was how that was birthed. That's how I got to the wholesaling train.
Very cool. And are you thinking of going direct to seller at this point in your wholesaling efforts? You know, getting lists and you know, contacting people that you know, that are in a situation where they need to get rid of the house and so forth?
Oh, definitely. I mean, that's been the grind over the last couple of months, honestly, and just hitting up the pre-foreclosure list, getting the probate list from the county clerk's office. Spent a lot of time at the county clerk's office in the last couple of months, but and something I'm finding even at the very, very outset of doing this is that if you can be the first point of contact for these sellers, because as soon as this information becomes public, whether it's, you know, the pre-foreclosure list, when it gets posted on the county's website, you know, as soon as that information is public and online, you know, all of these wholesalers start hitting these sellers up, just, you know, like one after the other after the other. So if you can find a way to kind of get in with them first, you know, as soon as this information is available, I'm finding that's just, it's a really good way to be, I mean, the first person that they go to and potentially sell to, if you can kind of get to them first. So long answer to your question, but yeah, I'm definitely going direct to seller and just trying to think about the most creative, efficient ways to do so.
That's great. That's great. Now, taking a step back a little, and I wanted to zero in on this area especially, mm-hmm. is, okay, you know, started listening to podcasts, started getting, you know, kind of intrigued about real estate investing, but what really, I mean, think back, what kind of held you back in the beginning from actually, you know, taking that step? And I know that, you know, you were going through a lot of things and trying to figure out, you know, what was going to make sense. But can you kind of bring us back to that and how you finally took the leap?
Yeah, I remember, I think I've already mentioned it, there was an initial kind of education phase that lasted about, maybe 6 months or so before I really started taking any action to like get a team set up in Dayton and actually go and visit, like started taking the actual actions to buy my first property. I remember hitting like the 3 month period in that, you know, quote unquote education phase and feeling like, I remember the thought being, I've done as much education as is going to be helpful for me now. And I know that in order for me to actually, you know, continue to move the needle, I'm going to have to start taking like real action. And that was about the 3 month point. And there was another kind of like 3 months or so where I kind of like dilly dallied and was like, well, I need to know more. I need to learn more. I need to read this other book. I need to, you know, read this other blog post, listen to this other podcast, whatever. But I definitely remember having the realization of there is a level of education that you are not going to get, or the only way you're going to get that level of education is by actually beginning to do. And for me, that was about 3 months into my education phase. I was like, I've gleaned as much as I possibly can from just reading books and listening to podcasts. And so it was, you know, it took me a little while longer to actually, you know, leave, quote, not that we ever stopped learning, but leave the solely education phase, if you will. But I did. And I mean, you even already mentioned this in the intro, is that, you know, there's only so much you can glean from reading and listening. And the rest of it, the rest of the learning comes by doing and by, at times learning very hard, painful lessons.
So. Now you met a broker that I think you did, I could be off, but you referred to me, right? That he was, I wasn't the insurance and also real estate. Or am I way off? I might be.
I kicked a couple guys over to you recently. Were you talking about my friend Ryan in Dayton?
I think so. Yeah. And he,
I emailed you and his brother Will, just because I wanted you guys to connect. And then I also connected you with my friend Paul down in Austin.
Okay.
He's the developer. Is that who you're thinking of?
No, you know, I might have him confused with somebody else, though. But I know there was like one key broker that you connected with that just really was helpful and helped you learn, you know, the good parts and the bad parts of town and the, you know, the difference and so forth, that I just remember you sharing that with me. But
that's probably my friend Ryan Ingram. Shout out, Ryan, what's up? He's in Dayton and doing very well for himself, and he's a great guy and a mentor. So
awesome. Yeah, I think that's important. You know, we talk about that too, is the importance of putting that team together and having a good, reliable team that you can count on early on, and you know, and then to build from there. And it sounds like you've been doing that.
Yeah, I mean, and especially for someone like me, surrounding myself with people that know more than I do and are farther along in this business has been critical to, you know, any level of success that you could say I've had. I mean, especially because I personally have, you know, zero building experience, none. Like, I'm terrible with my hands. I hate swinging a hammer. Like, it's not my lane now, and it's never going to be. Like, that's just – and so, you know, surrounding myself with people who, you know, that is their lane, that is their skill set, and not just the builders, but the lenders and the property management team and the investors and the people that are doing what I want to do but have been doing it for years and years and years. I mean, it's – that those connections and those relationships, their value can't be quantified. You know, it's just so invaluable being around those folks that are beyond you.
That's great. Great advice. Well, you know, getting started, we all, like you mentioned, we learn once we get started. And, mm-hmm. What would you say would, you know, as one of the sort of the bigger mistakes you made in the beginning that you learned from?
Yeah. You know, I was thinking about the answer to this question and thankfully I've made more mistakes than I could possibly count or remember, but, there hasn't been a like business ending sized mistake yet, knock on wood. I mean, there have been 1,000 little ones, but one of the biggest mistakes, one of the things that I wish that I had done differently was done a little bit more prep work and setup for making my investing a business, as opposed to just kind of a one man Wild Wild West show. You know, I wish that I had had the conversations with my CPA and my attorney and had started to implement the things, the systems that you glean from them and from their expertise. I wish I had had those conversations and started to implement those things earlier than I did, because as I started to kind of ramp up over the last handful of months and really get moving, the fact that I hadn't had those conversations and hadn't done that setup kind of came around to bite me a little bit. And I've been paying for that. A little over the last couple of months. So I would say my biggest mistake would not be doing the proper setup to make my investing run like a business.
Excellent. Now, you initially went out there to, you know, get a rental property and then go back to once your work, you know, was no longer remote. Tell us about that decision. Obviously, you didn't. And how did that come about, sort of the genesis of that?
Yeah, that was a bit more of a personal decision, really, than like a business one. I found myself loving life here in Waco, not particularly wanting to go back to Los Angeles as the pandemic was still ongoing. And so just between the connections that I was making here, the friends that I had here in Waco, and the opportunity here. I mean, there's more opportunity to buy long-term buy and hold rentals and cash flow in Waco than there is in Los Angeles. So, I mean, there certainly was that kind of that business factor there. But you know, those things combined, not particularly wanting to go back to Los Angeles, was impetus for me to stay here.
Just more quality of life issues.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Quality of life. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what did you do, you know, maybe when you started out to ended up being something that, you know, more of a success, something that you really looked at that, I'm glad I did that, you know, in the early stages.
Yeah. I kind of, to borrow from my answer earlier, I would say, and this is a more high level thing I realize, but just the surrounding myself with folks that are just far beyond me. I mean, that's just paid dividend after dividend after dividend. I'm very glad that my first deal, it was a BRRRR, that I ran it as a BRRRR deal on my first deal. Because it just, as you do that BRRRR process, I mean, there's so, like, you hit all the notes, right? I mean, you buy, you've got a rehab, you can't just stick a renter in there, like, it needs work. So, you know, you buy it, you fix it, you go through the refinance process. So, I mean, you're just hitting all of these points of buying real estate that you're going to have to that you're going to be doing for as long as you're in this business, you know? So, I'm just very glad that, that my first deal was a burr just because of all that I learned on that first one. And, you know, thankfully it worked out, by and large, without any major hiccups. And I was able to, you know, pull a decent amount of cash out of it and have a cash flowing property on my first one. So, you know, you hear horror stories of the first deal going terribly awry. Thank goodness that wasn't my experience. And I was able to get out with a good cash flowing property and a lot of valuable experience.
That's excellent. Yeah, it's a great strategy. Great strategy. Now, you know, a lot of our folks who are listening, we've got all ages, as you can testify to, you know, for those that are approaching retirement or already in retirement, what advice would you have based on your experience in investing that might be something that might interest that group?
Sure. Yeah, I think that a good question to maybe ask anyone in their retirement age that want to get started in this would be like, well, what's your pain threshold? Like, how involved do you want to be in something like this? Because it's not terribly complex as we hear people say, but it is a lot of hard work. And so, I think they would have to answer that question first. Like, how involved do I want to be? How much effort do I want to put into something like this? And kind of once they figure that out, then you could maybe answer, or you could maybe find someone to partner with. Like, let's say, after you think about how much kind of effort they want to put in something, they're like, well, I don't know if I want to learn an entire new industry and skill set at 65 or whatever. I mean, if that's the case, then you could leverage someone like me. I'm actually partnering with my parents on the properties that we buy in Dayton. And, you know, they're not particularly keen on learning an entire new industry, entire new skill set when they're nearing retirement age. But they're down to provide some capital and, you know, give me a little support when I need it. But, you know, so I'm, you know, I would suggest, can you find someone that you can leverage, someone who is, you know, roaring and ready to go, and could you fund them? Could you, you know, is that a route you could possibly take? So that's what I would float that to them.
Yeah. And I think that's a you know, an area we probably don't cover as much here, but private money lenders and hard money lenders are in huge demand. And they get a great return on their money, and that to me is a much overlooked area, and I think that folks that you know can take that route. It is very passive, and you have this incredible asset that backs up the loan. So it's not like, you know, if somebody messes up, you've got a property that you can sell, and, you know, for cash. And so, you know, it's a pretty solid investment, and it's not like, you know, buying a stock or something like that, index fund or whatever it may be, that if it goes down, well, it goes down and that's it. You know, if things don't work out here, you've at least got that asset to fall back on. So yeah, I think it's a good route too for people that maybe don't want to, you know, roll up their sleeves there and totally take those calls, you know, for the plumbing in the middle of the night and that kind of stuff that maybe just want to get a good return on their dollars.
Yeah, I mean, if they can find a trusted operator and they've got some self-directed IRA funds lying around, I mean, that's a very, very great route, I would say.
Excellent. Well, you have, you know, really just kind of start off here. You are now a independent, you know, you've got your own, supported by your business. And, you also got some, you know, reduced some expenses there, which are very smart too, by, house hacking. I'm sure you're building up all kinds of equity too, cause you're in some good markets. What's sort of your long-term goal here, looking ahead, for your business, where would you like to see that in 10, 20 years down the road?
Yeah. I mentioned my parents earlier, and a big part of my investing with them is I just want to make sure that they are set for retirement. So I want to continue working hard and just being able to work up the portfolio that can provide them everything that they would ever need or want once they retire. So that's a huge part of it for me. As far as the long-term vision, I mean, that's something I'm still really trying to work out. I mean, the financial freedom piece and all that, I mean, that's great. And I certainly want that as much as everyone else. But where it all is exactly going to go, I don't really know. I mean, I would say my most immediate goal would be to have my portfolio be able to sustain itself. You know, if, for instance, if one of the properties 6 months from now, you know, were to take a $10,000 hit because of a terrible rehab that I had to give because the tenants trashed it when they moved out, I mean, that would be pretty tough right now. But, you know, if I've got 10 or 20 units, I mean, that's going to soften the blow a little bit. So that's what I mean when I say I want to build the portfolio to where it can sustain itself. So I would say that's the most immediate goal. And then after that, I'm not exactly sure. I mean, I'm kicking around, maybe getting into syndicating some deals in the upcoming years after I just kind of earn my stripes a little bit more. And more than anything in the immediate, I really just want to be a trusted operator for my investors. Right. Because I mean, I've got loans out from private money lenders, and I want to be someone they can trust. I want to be someone that they know that I can give Ian my capital and it's going to be in good hands. So in the immediate, that's really huge for me, is just gaining the skills to be a trusted, reliable operator.
That's excellent. Excellent goal, too. And trying to help your parents out. That's very awesome. So, that's neat. That's very neat. In this process, it seems like, you know, one that you've definitely learned a lot and are learning and continuing to learn. And especially mm-hmm. as you start getting into wholesaling, you know, a whole different world there, but a great way to generate capital. Are you sort of one of your goals, you know, trying to pay down your properties? You're going to continue to hold on to them for leverage. What are your thoughts there? And, you know, some people just say, boom, I just want to have them all free and clear, so I don't have to worry about the mortgage and so forth.
No, I don't think I'm going to pay them down. I mean, I would like to, especially given where the market is going, or I mean, where we don't know what is going to happen, and given the state of the world with wars and pandemics, and you know, so I would like to have as much good fixed rate debt as possible to be a hedge against inflation. You know, if I would love to have my biggest expenses on these property be fixed for the next 30 years, and I mean, so long as I'm buying right and I'm cash flowing, then that's my goal for the rentals is to just get that good long-term debt.
Yeah. And hey, it's great for your taxes. It's it's all kinds of nice benefits there. So that's smart. Well, we have come to what we call our wrap it up section here, and we ask you a series of quick questions. You share resources that have been of value to you, and if you are ready, we can go ahead and wrap it up.
The fabled wrap it up section. I am ready.
Here we go. Favorite real estate book?
That is probably going to be David Green's long distance book. I mean, it's got just about everything you need, especially if you're starting out. Like, it just covers all the bases. And if you want to do it long distance, like, you know, I've been doing, it was pretty invaluable to me.
I love that book. Yeah. Yep. He's got a great approach to it. Plus, he has this incredible network of people, you know.
That's helpful for him.
Yeah. Really, really great. If you can tap into that, that's awesome. How about favorite just general business book?
That would be The 12-Week Year by Brian P. Moran and Michael Lennington. Have you read that, Bill?
No, I haven't.
In a nutshell, it essentially encourages its readers to kick annualized thinking out the door for your goal setting and operate off of a 12-week year instead of your regular calendar year. Because how many times have we set a goal in January? And March rolls around, we're like, oh, you know, I got time. And then, you know, June rolls around, we're like, I still got time. And then all of a sudden it's November and we haven't done a thing to accomplish what we wanted to in January. And part of their thesis is, and there's a lot of great thinking and psychology that goes into this, but is that you can't waste any time on a 12-week year. you know, like you cannot afford to waste a week, not even a day, if you've got 12 weeks to accomplish your goal. So there's a lot more that goes into it that's been hugely helpful for me. But man, that book was like rocket fuel for me.
That's a great, great recommendation. Yeah, I got to check that out. Excellent. How about a favorite website for success?
Bigger Pockets.
Yeah,
there. I'll join the chorus. I mean, it is what it is. It's pretty great.
That's great. A great resource. How about favorite app?
That would be Things by Cultured Code. It's a task management app, and I would be dead in the water without it.
Oh, it's called Things, T-H-I-N-G-S?
T-H-I-N-G-S, yep.
I like Things. I haven't heard of that. It's like I had to check it out. Favorite quote?
I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. Jesus Christ said that.
I love that. I love it. Wow. Well, here is our final question. And you're kind of too young to have experienced this, but nonetheless, okay, if you lost everything, all your assets, okay, and you had to start all over knowing what you already know, and you only have $1,000, what would you do to relaunch your real estate investing business?
Well, tell you what, I'll take that question. I'll make it even more difficult. And I'll say, what if I lost everything and even had to move to a market where I didn't know a soul? I would buy a computer, and then I would go to the first real estate meetup that I could possibly find. I would buy everyone around appetizers and just start networking.
I love it, and
making a relationship. I mean, look, this, you know, our success or failure so much, you know, rides or falls so much on who we know. And so I would just start, you know, making those connections and relationships right away.
I love it. That's a great idea. First time I ever heard that one, Ian. Well, I'm sure there's folks that are listening, and there may be even people listening in Waco or maybe Dayton or who knows where that might be interested in meeting you or finding out more about you and what you do. How can people do that? How can people get in contact with you?
You know, I'm a bit of an online ghost. I don't have much of a presence online. That might be changing at some point soon, but really kind of come to Waco. If you want to get into, just, you know, visit Central Texas. We can hang out at Magnolia, visit Chip and Joanna Gaines. No. Yeah, I don't really have much of a presence online, but I'll shoot you an email address, Bill, that you can maybe put in the show notes if anyone wants to get in touch.
Yeah. Okay. We'll definitely get a hold of your email address and make that available. Awesome. Well, we come to the closing, and I guess you know what's next, right?
I do, yes.
And, you know, you're out in, you know, hound dog country out there, right? I mean, Waco's got to have its share of hound dogs, right?
Oh yeah, definitely.
Okay. So, you know, I mean, when you were in Burbank and LA, you know, I mean, I don't know. I guess there's a few.
We had a whole slew of chihuahuas, but I can't say any.
They don't know how to howl.
No, okay. No.
I've got one. I know.
Yeah.
So if you're ready, you can close us out with your best old hound dog howl.
Arf. Just kidding.
Oh, that was a good one. That was good.
I scared the heck out of my dog. Yeah, sure did. Sorry, dude.
I love it. Well, thank you so much for being on, Ian. I think it's great. You know, we always have these people on that have been around forever doing it. It's so neat to talk to somebody that's still fresh, has got all the excitement, and they're still doing stuff and, you know, looking at things and learning. And so it's been a real help. I'm sure a lot of our listeners appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. It was just a ton of fun. And thanks a lot for having me on. And we'll talk soon.
You bet. And I also want to thank all our old dog listeners out there for joining us. I know there's a lot of other things you could be doing right now, but the fact that you've taken the time to join us means a lot. And we really appreciate it. Please note everything that Ian talked about today will be outlined in detail in our show notes at olddogsreinetwork.com/blog. And you're going to look for the episode with Ian Gilligan. Well, that's the show for today. Remember, cash flow is king and real estate investing the means. Until next time, keep moving forward and may God bless.
Thank you very much for visiting the Old Dogs REI Network. We would greatly appreciate if you would stop by iTunes and let us know what you think of the show.
We would love if you could subscribe to the podcast, give us a 5-star rating, and write a review. The more ratings and reviews we receive, the more visible the podcast will be to others. Thank you.